And so Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the next verse is an important verse. That's why the meter has changed, where he's now describing who this supreme consciousness that we call as Brahman, that we call as the formless substratum, which again is indescribable. That's what they say. This consciousness cannot be described. But in this beautiful verse, Bhagavan Sri Krishna has given us some pointers that if we focus on those pointers, we can reach that supreme consciousness. So verse number 9 is the change of meter. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram.
Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram.
Anoraniyam Anusmaredyah.
Anoraniyam Samanusmaredyah.
Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam.
Sarvasya dhataram achintya rupam
aditya varnam tamasah parastat.
Aditya varnam tamasah parastat.
Together. Kavim puranam anushasitaram anoraniyam smananusmaredyah sarvasya dhataram achintya rupam aditya varnam tamasah parastat. So these are a few qualities of that Parama Purusha Divyam, that supreme consciousness. These are a few pointers, just as if you want to see the moon and the moon is behind a branch and somebody says, where is the moon? Can you see it? So you point the finger and you say, look behind the branch, behind the leaves, you can see that little sliver, the crescent moon, that is the moon. So the finger is not the moon, but the finger points towards the moon. And if you look in the direction, if you keep looking at the finger, you will never see the moon. But if you look in the direction pointed by the finger, you will reach the moon. You will be able to see the moon. So similarly, the scriptures point us to that supreme truth. The scriptures, even though they are composed in human language, give us the highest knowledge. So these are the pointers. If we look in that direction, you will reach that. So what is Kavi? Kavi in Hindi, in many languages, means poet. But when it is talked in this Vedantic language, it means the knower, omniscient, the one who knows everything. So Lord is the knower of everything. He's omniscient, and which is true. Every action of mine, God knows. Every thought, He knows. Every emotion, that consciousness, not he or she, but that consciousness which is with formless, which is within us, knows all actions, all thoughts, all emotions, not only of you and me, but of the entire beings, all animals, birds, plants, fish, whatever actions they are doing, is known to that one consciousness. So it is Kavi. Purana means ancient. What it means is it is beyond time. Even when there was no time, there was no universe, there was nothing, consciousness alone was. And that time there was no time, there was no calendar, there was no second and hours and minutes, because the one alone was, in that consciousness, there was not even a concept of time. It was not that at some time God came into being and then it is here and at some time it will disappear. No, there is no time. That's why it is said it is Puranam. It is ancient. It is beyond time. It is before everything, even before time was. Anushasitaram. Anushasitaram means it is the ruler. Ruler or the controller. So what do we mean by that? What it means is it's not that God is sitting somewhere and, you know, punishing us like a ruler. What it means is that it is that from which everything is. Nothing except Him. Like gold is the controller of, is the ruler of all ornaments, right? Ornaments are what? Nothing but gold. Gold appearing in different names and forms is that. So you and I are that one consciousness which is appearing with different names and forms, and male, female, young, old, those are all our manifestations. But there is one God alone who is Anushasitaram. Anoraniyam. And Anoraniya means subtler than the subtlest. The other places, the Upanishad, it says Anoraniya Mahameva Tadvam
Mahanaham Vishwaham Vichitram. So Bhagavan says, I am subtler than the subtlest and bigger than the biggest. They say, wait, decide. Are you smaller than the smallest or are you bigger than the biggest? And we always have this idea, there is this body, then there is the mind, then there is the intellect, then there are all our organs and physiological and the heart and lungs, and deep inside somewhere in the heart, there is this small little light of consciousness. So we have this idea of God. So God says, yes, I am subtler than the subtlest, which means even I'm subtler than the atom. I am subtler than the protons, neutrons, electrons. I am subtler than all of that because I am subtler means pervasive. Just as ice is there, when it becomes water, water is more pervasive, right? Ice only occupies one area. When the ice melts, the water occupies more space. And then when the water evaporates and becomes steam, then it becomes more subtle, more pervasive. So when God says it is subtler means it is more pervasive. It is there everywhere, even whether neutrons, electrons are not. He said, okay, I am smaller than the smallest, but I am also bigger than the biggest. He said, how can you be bigger than everything and smaller than everything? So the example they gave is space. Now space, when you look in the needle, you know, you have seen the needle, the eye of the needle where we put the thread. How small is that eye, right? And there is space in that, right? In that eye, there is space. So the space is there. So we say it is smaller than the smallest. It is there. Even between our electrons, neutrons, protons, there is space. That's what they say. The atoms are constantly moving. So that subtle space is space. And also space is huge, where all the planets, all the stars, all the billions of galaxies are floating in that space. So space is subtler than the subtlest, bigger than the biggest. So just as space is, so that's what Bhagavan says, I am subtler than even space and I am even bigger than space. Even space is in me. So anoriniyam anusmaredya. So remember me as that, adya. So this you can remember me. Then he says, sarvasya dhataram, I am the support of all. Support of all, obviously we have talked that without God nothing would function. But the best example is movie, where there's a movie screen. Now the movie is playing on the screen. If there was no screen, we would not be able to project the movie, right? Where would we show the movie? So the screen is required for the movie to play, and the movie is constantly playing on the screen. But the screen remains unaffected, but the screen is the support of the movie. So in that movie, if there is blood, you know, killing, the screen doesn't become red. If there is fire, the screen doesn't get burnt. If there's flooding, the screen doesn't get wet. If there's killing, the screen remains unaffected. But in the presence of the screen, everything is going on. So similarly, God is the support, the substratum in which all of us are functioning. So that is what it is said. It is the support. And then he says it is achintya rupam. Achintya rupam means I cannot think about God. You say, well, if you can't think about God, then why are we talking all these lectures and Bhagavad Gita? What they say, when they say achintyam cannot be thought of, cannot be thought like an object. Like with my eyes, I can see objects. With my ears, I can hear sounds. With my nose, I can smell and so on. With my hand and feet, I can grab and walk. With my speech, I can speak. With my thoughts, I can think. So all these equipments work in the presence of consciousness, but they cannot know consciousness. They cannot know. Yeah, they cannot know. Then why all the Upanishads? So the Upanishads are all meant to teach us to turn the attention inward to the subject, to who is the knower, who knows my thoughts, who knows my emotions, who knows my ideas, who knows my body, who knows my mind, who knows my intellect, who knows my desires. So that consciousness I am. So that does not become an object, but it is the subject. It is I, the knower. That is this consciousness. So that's why it says you cannot think of it like an object. You can know it as I, just as the example they gave is a flashlight. Now there is a dark room and the power is gone. The flashlight can illumine everything in the room. But the flashlight cannot tell you which battery you have in the flashlight. Is it ever ready or is it Duracell or how many volts? You can't. Because if you take the battery out and then you try to see the battery, you say, I don't know what, the flashlight won't be able to function. It'll go off. So similarly, this consciousness cannot be known by my senses, by my mind. But in the silence of my meditation, when I turn my mind inward, I come to experience my oneness with that. With that, and that consciousness is the subject. It is the knower. It is a little difficult concept, but the more you think about it, it will become clearer. And then it says, Aditya Varnam. It is like the sun. You know, the sun does not need another light to illuminate. For example, if it's dark, we put on a flashlight or we put on the room light. The bulb is needed to illumine the room. But to illumine the sun, do you need another light? No, the sun is self-luminous. The sun is ever luminous. It is never that in the sun there is nothing called darkness. The sun is always luminous. So that what it means is the sun has the ability to illumine everything around it. So God is the illumining factor that even illumines the sun. Even the sun gets its energy to illumine from God. That's why the stena natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam nema vidyuto bhanti kutoyam agni. When we do the aarti, tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. So even the sun and the moon get its energy to illumine from that God. So, and when it says sun, then we have the idea that sun is only there in the daytime. What happens at night? The sun is not there. So that's why Bhagavan says, tamasav parastat. That means even darkness is known to consciousness. Like if you are in a dark room alone and somebody says, oh, are you there? You don't say, oh, well, let me turn on the light to see I'm there. No, I know I'm there. Even if it's pitch dark, even I cannot see anything, I know I am there. So that which illumines light and also illumines darkness, which that's why in light I can see everything. And in darkness also, I am aware of my presence, even in the middle of the night, even if it's completely dark. So that's why it says that consciousness which knows light and also knows darkness and is beyond both. So these few pointers will tell us that who is this God? Is all-knowing, omniscient, is ancient before time. It is the controller of everything. It is subtler than the subtlest, bigger than the biggest. And it is the support on which this whole universe functions. And it can be known as I, as this subject, not that, but yeah, when we worship God in a particular form, yeah, we worship God as an object, as Sri Krishna or Sri Ram or Mother Durga. But ultimately, we have to understand that that Lord that is outside is also Lord that is within me, which Dhruva experienced that when he saw Lord Vishnu. So God is not only limited to that form, is not only in the temple, but God is everywhere, all pervading, formless. So that is the essence of this particular verse. And this shows us how we can remember God in meditation, in prayer, and also throughout all our activities. Whatever I am doing, I should remember God and develop an attitude of humility and love. Love is the very, very powerful force. What we love, we remember. Like the mother loves her child, she will constantly remember the child. So when we develop this relationship of love with God, we will constantly remember God. Yeah. So to know somebody well, you have to love that person. No. So let us time for some comments. Mayur, you have anything you would like to say?
I like the guy who wrote the book and the professor. What I took from that story was, although it's important to like achieve things, it should never come at the expense of forgetting what's truly important.
Yeah. Very good.
Very good. Thank you. That's good. Krina?
I really like the concept of like having a favorite version, like Krishna or Vishnu. I never really understood like why we split up into so many different forms of God, but that made a lot more sense. Like like it makes more sense to find something that you love, and it would make it easier to worship God. So I really like that explanation today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's very good. They say God is one, but he takes various forms for us to love him or her. So even not, and God is not even male. God is beyond form, is formless. So it is that consciousness who takes various male and female forms to bless the world, and we can pick one. But thank you. That's a very good point. Vandita, anything you would like to add?
Yeah, I liked how in the beginning you talked about how we often separate religion from our daily life. I think
yes,
that's something that happens to us a lot. Mm-hmm. So this lecture was eye-opening and learning how to overcome that.
Sure. No, I felt the same way before, you know, that there's a difference between church and temple and between the world. Thank you. That's a good point. Sagar?
I like how, like, the same thing that we need to apply, like, what we're learning in class, and so we shouldn't separate the, like, what we learn in the temple to our real lives.
Thank you. Harshini?
Actually, it should come into your each and every
hand.
Right.
I really thought the topic that you talked about in the beginning and how you compared the situation that Arjuna was in and the battlefield, and you compared it to, like, the internal conflicts that we all have, like fear and arrogance, and how we have to overcome that. And I think that also, like, goes along the fact of how religion kind of relates to our own lives and how we can apply that every single day by trying to get rid of those, like, negative qualities.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I when I read that particular example, I thought that was very applicable. I really like that. Thank you. Harshita?
I like the part where you talked about the Joker and how you said that it was important to stay true to yourself and not get caught up in, like, the role of your daily life. And I think that was important, like, especially in, like, today's world. I think that was really relevant.
Kushi Nakrani?
Yeah, I liked how you, when you talked about the flashlight theorem and how you said, like, the sun is self-illuminated. So...
yeah, thank you. Rochelle?
This is, you talked a lot about this, like it was at the beginning, but how emotion or anger and all, like, emotion kind of comes and goes. When anger, sometimes you're like, why did I get angry about that? And personally, I go through that a lot, especially with, like, my sister and stuff. You know, it's, you're always arguing, and then at the end, you're like, wait, that was so, like, not worth arguing over. Why did we do that?
Right.
And I feel like that's just really relevant if you want to maintain yourself and, like, stay in a steady state of mind. It's all about tempering those urges. So I thought
yeah,
that was really interesting.
Yeah, that's very good. Actually, there is a Muniji who comes once a year. I haven't seen him lately, a Jain Muniji. But he talks about anger and how destructive it is to ourselves and to others. To others, of course, and hurts them, but also to myself, because it raises your blood pressure and your heart rate and all your epinephrine and all the adrenaline and everything secretes, and it is very, very destructive. And so first one has to be aware that I have this problem called anger, you know, first. And then secondly, once you become aware, then, like you said, you realize it was not worth getting angry over. And then they teach various techniques, count up to 10, or, you know, watch your breath. But when you see the adverse consequences of anger, how it is hurting others and myself, then slowly you will be able to overcome anger. And so, and then also seeing the other person's point of view and how, you know, and then maybe after you have hurt somebody, maybe apologizing. So all those factors. But yeah, that's a very good point. I think anger is something we all suffer from, the consequences. So thank you. That's a very good point.
We should know
also why we are getting angry, you know, because of not understanding the correct understanding. Any other youngsters I have forgotten? Any?
Sagar.
Sagar already spoke, right?
No.
Sagar? No, okay, go ahead.
Oh, I already spoke.
Yeah, he already did. Anybody else? In the youngsters, children? No?
Rick.
Rick Bose, yeah, Rick. Is he still here? We lost him.
I think he went to make food for Mother's Day.
Oh, okay, that's
yeah.
good.
That's why some of the kids are not
Some of
here.
The kids are not there. Maybe they're
making lunch.
Making lunch. They can't take mom out to lunch, so they're making lunch. How about adults? Anybody would like to add anything to this, what we have talked about?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you are explaining us the Bhagavad Gita, right and wrong becomes very clear. But we live in the life that is a lot more gray. And navigating what's right and wrong in this gray life, how that becomes difficult at times, especially with personal relationships.
Right.
How do we manage to do that then?
I think that's a very good question. Even that time, even though it was black and white, for Arjuna it was a lot of gray, because on the Kauravas he saw his grandfather and his teacher, so he saw a lot of good people who were on the side of the wrong, and that's why he got confused. See, Bhagavan Sri Krishna had put the chariot in front of Duryodhana and Karna. Arjuna would have had no problem fighting the battle, but Bhagavan Sri Krishna wanted him to see that why is he fighting, so he purposely put the chariot in front of Bhishma and Drona. He says, watch these Kauravas. And so Arjuna immediately got deluded because he did not know his duty. So in life also there are black and white and gray, which is true, but when you read the scriptures and when you see inside, we all know what is right and what is wrong. Fundamentally we know that. We might say, oh, this is gray and this is not so gray, but actually we all know, and ultimately it is, what would my scriptures teach me, what would Sri Krishna say, and what my conscience. So these three factors, when you put them, what is in the scriptures, what the Lord has spoken, and what my conscience is telling me, then the idea will become very clear, what is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. So that's what they say, tasmat shastram pramanam te, it says in the Upanishad, let the shastras be your guide, let them, the scriptures, be your guide and teach you. So, but I think, yeah, again, if there's doubts, then that's when you go to the Gita or you ask somebody wise, maybe a Swamiji or, you know, somebody whom you can call or write to. So develop a relationship with some teacher whom you can call or write, and you can always get answers. Or just go to the Lord, sit in front of Bhagwan and say, God, you guide me. So the ideas will come from within, I think.
Many people do that.
Yeah.
Pray to God.
Yeah, give me the wisdom. Like they say, what I should do and what I should not do, and the wisdom to know the difference. You know, that famous saying is there in everybody's house. We'll do the Hanuman Chalisa, chant the Hanuman Chalisa for asking for world peace and asking for Hanumanji's grace and blessings with us on this COVID problem.
जय हनुमान ज्ञान गुण सागर जय कपीश दिव
We'll do the closing prayers. Kai Navacha Manusendriva Buddhyatmanava Prakriti Swabhava Karomi Adyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami Narayana Yeti Samarpayami Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramaya Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Om Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Guru Hari Om. Thank you. Hari Om.